This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
So what the hell happened? I made the picks.
I can confirm they were on there earlier. I can confirm for vouching for KC, they were on there earlier.
I have your last week's picks.
No, they were in there because I remember I went and changed some stuff. And I remember the big reveal was the Bucks, who were 5 last week. They're not in the top 5 and they didn't even play.
All right, yeah, KC's got deleted. Because I was looking, I was like, oh, it's pretty similar. You guys are pretty similar except for a couple teams. KC's got deleted.
They just took me out.
They got lost in the cloud.
You hear this? Guys talking about the dog ate their homework.
I got confirmation.
They did. I'm vouching. I didn't vouch for him last time. I was with you last time. No, this time he really made his picks. They're just gone.
They deleted my picks.
Well, Google has conspired against Kenny Caraway, and this week's power rankings are over.
Luckily, I remember them. They're not too far off. So it's Chiefs, Vikings. I think I had the Ravens third. Yeah, because they didn't change. They won. So the Ravens third, Texans fourth. And that was the move that I made. I moved the Bucks out of the top 5 without playing a game. They didn't play. They didn't lose. Nothing like that. But they're
the
out
Bucks?
Of the, yeah, I moved them out.
Didn't the Bucks lose on Thursday?
Oh, they did lose on Thursday. So, yeah, now I'm justified. The Thursday was so long ago, I feel like they had a bye. But, yeah, the Bucks are out.
It does feel like an eternity ago. I was like, what did my Bucks do? I was like, oh, yeah, that heartbreaker.
Yeah. So now I'm justified in having them out. But either way, whether they didn't play or whether they lost or not, I was going to put the Commanders.
They lost on Thursday.
I was going to put the Commanders at 5. They look great. And I do have the Bucks as the first.
That would have been whack. Just for the record, that would have been whack. No. You would have taken the Bucks out, who would have beaten your beloved Atlanta Hawks.
Well, not my the Falcons. They're not beloved. Falcons. I wouldn't say they're beloved. I wouldn't say that.
Ramsey's beloved Atlanta Falcons.
Definitely that.
I've come around on the Falcons a little bit, and that game helped. I didn't. You guys saw the Falcons from jump. I didn't. That game helped me come around on them
still
a little
only
bit.
3-2.
Huh?
I said they're still only 3-2.
Hey, he's giving us credit.
Yeah, true.
But I think they might have better football ahead of them.
Mm-hmm. They could. I mean, and Kirk, you know, he says once again he's starting to get more and more of a rhythm every game, and he's swag surfing. So, you know, he's fully embraced the Atlanta culture. Kirk Cousins gonna be coming to the game like, hey, Shouty, hey.
Oh, no, let's not do that, Kirk. Let's not do that, Kirk.
But, I think the Commanders.
Old rider. Send some VLs.
Coop the VLs.
Mm-hmm.
The other crazy part about that, too, if the Bucks had losses, they beat the football team to start the season, and I would still have the football team over the Bucks. I think their offense is pretty dynamic right now.
Yeah, I think they're legit. I hope that they're legit. I've never rooted for a Washington football team before, but I like their I love their quarterback. I respect their coaching staff. I think collectively they've got something here. So, like I said, I'm hoping it's not a kind of one of those cute stories at the beginning of a season. I hope it's sustainable, and I hope they wind up winning that division.
Well, maybe we'll talk about it a little bit more in depth tomorrow. Maybe not, but the box office game of the week for me, 10 a.m. in Baltimore. It is the football team against the Ravens.
Yeah.
Jaden versus Lamar. I'm locked in. And I might actually just be happy and like not thinking about anything, because if the Niners win, I'll be, got the Sunday off. I'm just happy. Like, I get to watch this game. It'll be all good. So, but that's box office. That is box office.
Yeah, I don't. I'm taking a quick look at the schedule. I don't think there's any question that's the marquee game of the weekend. Mm. Some people might be excited for the Lions Cowboys, I guess, but
that's a good game.
Got the Bills and Chiefs on Monday night. You got to be kidding me.
What's the Bengals Sunday night game again?
Bengals Giants.
Yeah, that's right, because I was going to the Kings game.
Hey, you could watch starting five.
I could. I'll you know, maybe when I leave the Kings game, I gotta go see the Kings.
There you go. Yeah, there you go.
I'll have all night.
Can you run your power rankings by me one more time?
Chiefs,
yep.
Vikings,
yep.
Ravens, Texans, okay. Commanders.
Okay, so that was the only change, was at the very end. You the Bucs, who lost to the Falcons, you threw the football team in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I do have the Bucs as the first team out. First team out.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't do first team out this week. I wasn't sure what to do there. Because I obviously like the Bucks, but Atlanta got my attention a little bit, so we'll see what they wind up doing. You had 49ers first out last week. I had Bills first out last week. I don't think either of those teams are going to get back into this conversation for a few more weeks.
I was talking to Jesse about this on Monday. Now, I can say this because I was tipping my hat. I was showing love when production was there, when wins were there. So you guys know I just ain't no hater. I just keep it a stack.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Allen got to start showing me something.
Who does?
Josh Allen. Not that he's not a good quarterback, but
yeah.
He's a really good quarterback. He's one of the top quarterbacks, but it's starting to look more like I said it would look at the beginning of the season, where he doesn't have his weapons and he's looking a little funny in the light. Even in these wins that he's had, he hadn't really done a whole lot. The Cardinals win, he did do a lot. He brought him back. But the Dolphins win, he didn't do much. And then he was terrible against the Ravens. And then this game against the Texans, I went back and watched that game. I mean, oh, my gosh. That was awful. He was 9 of 30. That is awful. So it's a big game for him coming up. He got to get that team winning. Actually, I think they might have a bye. But the next game they play, he's got to get that team back on a winning track. He's got to get them going a little bit.
You talking about Josh Allen?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Bills. No, the Bills play the Jets.
Oh, that's right. They do. I got the Jets winning the game, too. But I picked the Jets in the Pick'em League.
Yeah.
Not because the Jets are great, but just I could see how this works. I could see how this works.
The byes are the Rams, the two undefeated teams, and Jesse Tapia's Dolphins. Mm. Those are the byes this week: the Chiefs, the Vikings, the Dolphins, and the Rams. And of course, it starts tonight in just a couple of hours with the San Francisco 49ers and the Seattle Seahawks. This isn't the end of the world for the San Francisco 49ers. It's not a win or it's all over. It's nothing like that. But I I'll say this, because we talked about this heading into the season, that the idea that the 49ers would kind of coast to the playoffs, that they would just kind of be that they would just kind of pick up where they left off, coast back, face no adversity, face nothing, and then just be ready to face the Chiefs or whoever in the Super Bowl. That was always a bit naive. Mm. It's a very good football team. most of its core is still intact, but a lot like, well, a lot like what Sacramento Kings detractors will tell you. Well, you know, they're just healthy because that was a negative. You know, they're only here because they didn't get hurt. Mm-hmm. A lot of things went right for San Francisco last year, and they kind of needed that to continue. So the idea that, hey, they are facing some adversity, they're starting the season with some key players not around. I don't know when Christian McCaffrey is going to play. Part of me is starting to wonder if Christian McCaffrey is going to play. Dre Greenlaw, if he plays, he's playing in probably the playoffs are damn near close to it. Like, I don't know what sort of impact that has. And then you have just injuries that add up. Kittle in and out, Debo in and out, Brandon Ayuk trying to find his footing. Brock Purdy getting settled in, that defensive line maybe not being as good. Like, there was always going to be, in my mind, there always should have been the idea of some adversity in front of them. I'd rather them have the adversity right now than in week 15. I think they're a better football team than they're playing like right now. Mm-hmm. I'd go so far as to say I think they're a significantly better football team than they're playing like right now. But I always thought they were going to face adversity this year.
Jesse, you had something?
Yeah, so if they do lose today, are we still, like, they're still Super Bowl contenders and all that? Like, the season's not necessarily over. You can win the division, but we're still in on them, like, being able to get to the Super Bowl, like, just being one of those top-tier teams if they lose today?
Yeah, like, at some point, they have to start winning. At some point, they have to change my mind.
Because I feel like if they lose today, I feel like that's kind of, I mean, you have time to change it, I guess, but it's kind of who you are. Like, you can win the NFC West still, but I mean, we're pretty deep into the season. We're 0-3 against your division, 0-4 against the conference. It might just be who they are, no? For this season, at least.
I mean, it could be. One of the things, though, that, and you don't want to live like this, but we saw this two of the last 3 years from the 49ers. I think 1 year they were 3-5, another year they were 4-6. And those are two NFC championship years, like years they made it to the NFC championship game. So I don't usually, like I said, you don't want to live like this. And I don't usually like just kind of roll with these type of statements. But if we're going to be fair about it, somebody would probably say Kyle Shanahan teams play better in the second half of the season than they do in the first half. Why that is, I don't know. But like, that's the last three second halves of the season, they're probably something like, off the top of my head, like 25-3 in these last three seasons.
Tyler Jennings throws it in the chat. I'm genuinely asking here. Like, he says they went to the championship game starting at 3-5. Did they have like the same personnel issues that they have this year, like the same kind of issues that they're dealing with now they did it back then? Or not back then, but that year?
So
just a slow start.
I think this team, if we talk about personnel, I think the personnel is better than the 3-5 year. If the 3-5, whatever year Jimmy against the Colts in the rain, I think that was 2 years ago. I think that was a 4-6.
And I think I'm talking about the defense mainly too.
Well, the secondary was makeshift. You know, you had Greenlaw and Warner. It was a little flipped, right? Like, the secondary was makeshift, but, you know, the guys up front were better. This year, the guys up front aren't as good, but the secondary is a little better. So they kind of found a way. But I saw the same issues in both situations. They just couldn't get off the field. And whether that's because of, you know, their talent or whatever, they've got to find a way. But we're also saying it where, like, yeah, they can't get off the field. Defense is this, whatever the case may be. I mean, they, by all intents and purposes, they should have won those two of those games they lost. Like, they it's not, and that's the way I'm thinking. It's not like they just aren't good enough. They're not able to close out games. I think those are two different things. Like, not saying Jesse saying this or anybody saying it. They don't look like the first two weeks of the season Panthers out there. They don't look overmatched.
No, I don't think they're a bad football team. I still think they're a good football team. But if they lose today, I think I got like actual questions. Like, maybe they're just not as good as we expected this season. Like I said, you can still win the division this year and all that after losing, but maybe you're just not the Super Bowl contenders we thought for this season, at least.
I think it's fine to have questions about them. I will ask, like, not a loss is a loss, but like, how do they lose tonight? You know what I mean? Because that will influence how I feel. Do they lose similar to the way that they lost to Arizona, and that they were up late in the fourth quarter and turn the ball over? Do they lose similar to the way that they lost to the Rams? Like their best loss is to the undefeated, you know, Minnesota Vikings. They've coughed up games rather than getting blown out in games. They haven't looked like to steal a line from Kenny a few years ago, they didn't look like a championship football team this early in the season. Mm-hmm. But I can't write them off for that exact reason. It's early in the season. Mm-hmm. And you want them to look a certain way. You expect them to look a certain way for 18 weeks leading into to the playoffs or whatever. But that might just not be realistic for them. They could still finish... You know, is it realistic? No, they could still finish 14-3. Like, there's still plenty of things that they could do the rest of the year that go, yeah, this is 1,000% a Super Bowl team. This is everything we thought it would be. They go on another 6-game, 7-game, 8-game winning streak like they did in years past. This is everything we thought it would be. Like, all right, man, like, cool. Cause in week 6, you were talking about, well, if they don't get it done now, all right. I'm with Jesse in that, like, I'll have questions if they lose to the Seahawks tonight. I mean, I have questions today, but by no means is the season even remotely close to over. By no means do you have to change your expectations. You're going to have to beat good football teams coming up. You're going to have to beat Kansas City. I don't think they're a good football team, but at some point Dallas is going to take pride in the fact you beat their ass every time you step on the football field. Mm-hmm. Like, I have my antennas up for that game. You've got the Bucs who are trying to prove themselves. You've got a lot of tough football teams. Who knows where the Bills will be at that point? They could be desperate for a win at that point. Green Bay, the same thing. They're going to be fighting for their division all year long. Like, at some point, they got to stop. They got to start winning games, and they're going to have to start winning some really tough games too.
Well, I agree 100%. And it's got to start tonight. You know what I mean? You got to find a way to win this game just to feel good about yourself. And, it can flip your whole – mentality. If you win this game tonight, now all of a sudden you're tied for first place. And like I said, I said this on Sunday, said it on Monday. The mentality has kind of shifted for me. You don't focus on the big goal and the Super Bowl and winning the NFC and first round bye and all. You focus on the division. And that's why maybe my mentality has changed. Because you get the division, you get the home game in the wild card weekend. And then you go on the road to the divisional round.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I.
If your day sounds like
we need the report ASAP,
you deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Anything could happen. And we've seen them go on the road in a divisional round against a one seed and win. And that they've got the talent to be able to do it. Like, this, for instance, I know it's different, and we got to see more of the season. But if you played Washington in the divisional round, the 49ers versus Washington, Niners got to go to Washington. There's going to be a lot of people like, oh, it's Jaden's first, you know, playoff pressure and all this other. We got to see. And, you know, this team is experienced all this. You'd hear all that stuff as well. I thought Jesse was saying something. That's why I was letting him talk. But no, you'd hear all that. Like, they could easily go from winning the division, win that first wild card game, and get to the NFC Championship game. But got to take care of games like tonight, man. You don't want to go 0-3. What would they be, 0-3 in the division? Yeah. 0-4 in the NFC. You want to avoid that at all costs, man.
We'll come back. We'll talk with Matt George. Got a chance to listen to Locked On last night, and I know he's excited about what we saw from the Kings offense there in the first half. So we'll talk to our man from ABC 10 and the Locked On Kings podcast when Dilo and KC return here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
D'Lo and KC back at it on this Thursday afternoon. And what my man say? Hold on, I got to get it right.
From the worst slums of Sacramento.
Worst slums of Sacramento, baby.
Yeah, and we've got one of the, we got the Jacob Fatu of Sacramento with us right now, Matt George of ABC 10.
I Locked missed on Kings. They said that on the broadcast last night, the worst slums of Sacramento.
No, that was from weeks ago. That was on a SmackDown episode. That was probably a month or so ago.
Yeah.
Where Corey had said Solo plucked Jacob Fatu from the worst slums of Sacramento.
Yeah, we'll claim him. Fatu can be a Sacramento boy. We'll take him.
Yeah, so we've decided to work that into our show as much as possible.
What is the worst slums of Sacramento?
That's well, I've asked many people that question.
I don't think we're going to offend anybody.
No, I mean, we found out that I was about to say South Sac. We found out Stephen Brown is from South Sac. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Stephen Brown was, you know, 5'8", 165 going down Mac Road. You know,
wow. All right, okay. Well, I don't know. He said he worked in the Bay Area. He's got tickets to Stockton Kings. I thought maybe my man was living somewhere else.
Russ Dog 3-1. Come on, man. Don't do that,
Matt.
Don't do that,
Matt. Convey some of your excitement that you shared on the Locked On Kings podcast after watching one half of what felt like true Sacramento Kings basketball last night.
Well, let's start with the fact that DeMar DeRozan was literally perfect.
Yes.
Like, literally perfect. Yeah. He went 6 of 6, 2 of 2 from the line, blocked a shot. The guy that can't play defense blocked a shot. Also had, I think, an assist. He was perfect. And I think even an element of it that goes even further beyond that is he was perfect while the rest of the Sacramento Kings offense was fluid. And the fact that Mike shared with us before the game, I'm not drawing up anything for anybody. Like, this is almost schoolyard. Like, we have, that doesn't mean the Kings don't run sets, because DHO that's a set, but that's a fluid set that they can run throughout their motion, right? The Kings have been working on this five-out offense where they're spread out as much as possible and got different guys move and read and react depending upon where the ball is and what the defense is doing. So that's the free-flowing offense that they've been working on. But Mike didn't take any time to draw up, hey, DeMar, you're going to get the ball here, or De'Aaron, you're going to get the ball here, or Keegan, you're going to get the ball. It was just that the Kings starting five played together for the first time, and it looked like they've been playing together for years. And for four out of the five guys, that's true. But the fifth guy, the new guy that you're plugging in, looked better than anybody else. I mean, that's pretty exciting to me. The fact that the starters in that first half scored 47 points, shot like 62% or something like that, 21 of 31 from the field overall. And everybody ate. DeMar tied for the fewest shot attempts out of the core five. Take Keon Ellis out, put Malik Monk in. Malik had seven. Keegan also had six, or maybe he had seven. Domas had six, one of the two of those. And De'Aaron had 10. So everybody got their shots. DeMar didn't steal any shots from anybody. DeMar didn't negatively impact the shot totals and development of Keegan Murray by being out there on the floor with him. It was just adding another weapon to an already very volatile and versatile offense that the Warriors had no answer for, because I don't think anybody is going to have any answer for it. It's going to be just hope they miss shots. Like, that's going to be how you defend the Kings. Hope they miss, because somebody's going to be open at some point.
I'm with you 100%, Matt. Matt talking that talk right now. And forgive me if you already said this, but the thing about, you know, the offense last night is nothing looked forced. You know, everything was just natural, fluid. This is what DeMar does. DeMar will get the ball either by itself or on a dribble handoff, take one, two dribbles, get to the nail, pull up, it's a bucket. Like, he's going to do that for the rest of his life. You know what I mean? That's just what he does. Keegan was able to get in where he fit in. Sabonis, he was orchestrating things. Fox, he had 10 field goal attempts, but it really felt like he was coasting. You know, it didn't feel like he was forcing anything. It all looked natural. And that's the thing that really gets me excited. You combine that with the fact that they didn't even hit three-pointers last night. They still have that aspect of the offense to unlock. I said earlier, it's a top-five offense in the game this year. I'm going to stake my claim to that. This is a top-five offense in basketball this year.
Yeah, Casey, I'm glad you brought up the three-point shooting. I thought last night's like post-game press conferences was actually one of the best press conferences overall that the Kings organization had, and it's because of Keegan and De'Aaron pointing out two separate things. One of them was Keegan pointed out exactly what you talked about. The offense played very fluid, and the Kings scored 60 some odd points and led at halftime, and they had four made threes. Like, we know this team is way better from three-point range than that. So imagine how deadly the Kings were inside the arc. Now you add a halfway decent three-point shooting percentage on top of that, because I think they're like 4 of 13 or something like that. So it wasn't good. They shoot 38% or 40% as a team in that first half. The Kings are up by 10 minimum, right? So the offense looked that good, and it can be even better. That's what's exciting, number one. And then I asked De'Aaron, because I put out that clip that Warriors fans are crying over right now, which is Keegan Murray locking down Steph Curry for that possession, which was an awesome possession. And I asked,
lock him down to five titles.
Might as well have been the most insecure people. Anyway, and like, the Kings threw Keegan, De'Aaron, and Keegan all at Steph in one half. Three completely different guys that give you completely different looks. And I asked De'Aaron about that. Like, you don't stop Steph Curry, right? You just hope to throw things at him and change it up on him and hope that it works. And De'Aaron took the question, or took the answer, in a completely different direction. He basically said, he was like, we believe we have we have good individual defenders on this team, but we can't call ourselves a good defensive team if we're not playing good team defense. So Fox takes accountability immediately for the fact that the Sacramento Kings gave up far too many threes last night. The Warriors ended with 28. And yes, the starters didn't play the second half, but the Warriors had like 15 threes at halftime and were shooting over 50% from three-point range at halftime. Yeah. So the starters didn't do their job either. So I thought it was really eye-opening, and it was really refreshing to hear De'Aaron go, yeah, we had good individual defensive moments against Steph Curry, but as a team, we weren't good. We know we need to be better than that. and we can't call ourselves good defensively as individuals until our team plays good defense.
You brought up the 3-point shooting on the game. Obviously, we're focused on the first half. On the game, the Kings shot 25.9%. On the game, Matt, they gave up 53.8%. A couple of questions there. We're going to go one at a time because I'm going to be a good journalist. You talked about how good that they were inside the arc, the mid-range game. We saw Domas and DeMar running a two-man game together that made them both look like $1 million.
Right.
But do you think that inside the arc game is something that they might lean on a little bit more than they did last year? Or do you think as this thing starts to progress, probably as soon as tomorrow night, we see a little bit more of a balance between the two and the three, which the Kings obviously shot very well last year?
I think we'll definitely see the Kings lean on it more because they have one of the best weapons in that range now in the league. And that's something that outside of De'Aaron Fox, they did not have last season. So the Kings were so reliant on the 3-point shot or scoring at the rim last season. The mid-range was basically a void unless it was De'Aaron Fox. And we know De'Aaron Fox took a step back from 2 years ago when he won Clutch Player of the Year, right? He was a mid-range merchant. He was killing it from putting the ball on the floor, getting to that elbow, rise up. It was unguardable. He went away from that a little bit last season. I don't know if that's because the defense adjusted to him. I don't know if that's because he was shooting so well from 3-point range, or he was tired of putting the ball on the ground and getting whacked every single time he went inside the 3-point arc. So now the Kings can rely on the mid-range. And it, what it to me, D'Lo, it becomes like less of a boom or doom or risk reward or whatever the case may be. Like the Kings can have a poor 3-point shooting night, but if they are executing in other areas offensively, they're not going to fall drastically behind. I think it dawned on me at one point, the Warriors in the fourth quarter had 27 threes to the Kings 7. That means they had a 60-point advantage from beyond the arc. Like if you were to tell me that, I would have tell you the Kings were down by 25 plus. Kings were only down by 11. The reason for that, you start looking through, it's like, okay, what's different? What's different? Yes, it's DeMar DeRozan's shooting in the first half for sure. But you look at one of the new staples of the Kings offense, and it's offensive rebounding. The Kings have 8 offensive rebounds for 16 second chance points. That's what's keeping you in the game. So there are new elements to this team that I believe Sacramento will have games where they're putting up 40 plus threes because they have too many weapons on this team. And I think those guys are going to get so many open shots on the perimeter because of DeMar and Domas and De'Aaron. And they're going to have to take him. And Mike will get mad at you if you literally don't take an open three. But if those shots aren't falling, the Kings have different elements in place now to where they can withstand that, unlike before.
Yeah. What did you think about Domas and the way he played out there and him taking some mid-range jumper? We even talk about he had a couple, one in transition off the bounce. Like, what do you think about that? And what does that do for this team if he's not only willing to take that shot, but somewhat consistent with hitting that shot?
If you were to ask my comment section on Locked On Kings, that was the play of the game when Domas pulled up off the bounce and made that midi. And I think everybody in the arena was excited by it. Like, yeah. And he didn't take a three last night, so he didn't shoot the three ball. That's because he was primarily playing inside the arc with the DHO game with DeMar. And this is one of the reasons why I will obnoxiously talk you know what about Sabonis to the end of the earth and brag for him, because the guy is so freaking humble. You ask him about his two-man game with DeMar and he says, oh, my job's easy. DeMar makes my job easy. DeMar's never played with a big that can do what Domantas Sabonis does. And the fact that, like, I didn't even catch it, guys, when I was initially shooting it, but I posted DeMar scored like 3 buckets in the first like 5 minutes of the game. I recorded all 3 of them. I cut them all together, posted it for ABC10, and I captioned it like DeMar DeRozan is a certified bucket or something like that. Then I went back and watched it, and I realized all 3 of those shots came off of action with Domas right out of the gate. Like, the fact that DeMar can even get those good of looks because of the two-man game that he's playing with Domantas Sabonis. Yeah, DeMar is very, very good. But Domas is such a difference maker with everybody that he plays with. And it's something that, unless he's getting the assist on the DHO, it's something that does not show up in a box score. It's something that casual basketball fans or people that simply aren't watching take for granted or don't understand or don't appreciate. But when you watch with Domas, and more importantly, talk to the people that play with Domas, they tell you, this is who this guy is. This guy gets me better shots than I've ever had in my career just by playing with him. Mm-hmm. That is a tremendous asset to have that you're not going to find in numbers and in analytics.
Right. Well, get it off your chest, Matt.
Don't talk bad about my boy Domas. I haven't watched Starting Five yet, though. I got to watch it. I heard my boy Kevin.
I watched all 10 episodes yesterday, Matt. I strongly encourage you. Yes, I did.
You're insane. I heard Kevin John made it a couple of times.
Well, actually, not to spoil it, you did too. I think Kevin John made it in a visual component. You made it in an audio component.
Uh-oh, what did I say?
No, I think it was all excitement around the
shocking
Kings Warriors. I can't remember if it was the play-in game or if it was a recap of the playoff series, because they do a little bit of that. But yeah, your voice definitely made it in Kevin John's. Handsome face, definitely.
Netflix's Matt George.
That's a fact.
I'm waiting for my check.
Oh, it's on the way, Matt.
Just keep
waiting for it, buddy. What was the one thing regarding DeMar and DeMar alone that you were most excited about? Or most excited is the wrong word, because you'd be excited about the whole thing. Encouraged about with the way that he played?
I think it was just, it was a... like an affirmation of two things in particular. Number one was that everybody's been saying DeMar can fit seamlessly into this offense, and he did, at least in a small sample size. And two, the kind of proof of the things that I've been saying to counteract the kind of lazy commentary that we've seen this offseason, negative commentary about DeRozan not taking shots away from anybody. Like, there's nothing about the way DeMar DeRozan played last night that suggests that anybody's going to be sacrificing for him, or that they're going to be hurt in any kind of way because he's playing with them. And sure, we need to see it more. Some people are going to claim it's only one game. I need to see more of it. But these people should just watch DeMar DeRozan's entire career, regardless of where he's gone, and recognize, even with being the top guy, which he's not the top guy here in Sacramento, but even with being the top guy, he was consistently getting his teammates involved, and he wasn't a one-trick pony and one-man show. So seeing that play out in person and confirming those beliefs and feelings that I had about DeMar and this team, that was pretty fun.
What did you think about De'Aaron Fox's play? Like, as you kind of touched on it a little bit, he shot, I think, the most shots on the team with 10 shots, mm-hmm. at 11 points. But it didn't feel aggressive. Like, it didn't, I shouldn't say aggressive, like it didn't feel aggressive in a negative way, but it just didn't feel like he was forcing it. It felt like he was letting the game come naturally, and I thought he looked good out there. What'd you think about Fox in this, with the offense, with so many different options?
Again, I think it's a glimpse of De'Aaron Fox can coast, and I don't mean that in a negative way. Some people think coasting is, and to some extent, like, coasting on defense is what I think about what, like, James Harden does, right? Like, he just is there, right? And he saves all his energy for offense. That's not what De'Aaron Fox does. When I say coast, I mean, like, De'Aaron plays well, and we just expect him to play well. And he puts up, how many points did he have last night? Like 10 or 11 or something like that? 5 of 10 from the field or something? Like, okay. Like, De'Aaron did not even remotely close to come or at any point take over or have a massive possession where it was like, oh, De'Aaron's taking over this moment. He didn't.
De'Aaron did kind of look like he was kicking it last night.
And good for him. Like, yeah. He's trying to figure out how to implement everybody. And like, I'm still of the belief that De'Aaron Fox has to average, like, close to, if not 30 points per game to have a shot at winning or making an all-NBA team again and making him eligible for the Supermax. And I do believe that's important to him. Of course, team success matters too. But I think De'Aaron also recognizes that, man, it's not all on my back, and I can still get mine by making an appearance every other possession or every two or three possessions being the one to attack. Mm-hmm. But De'Aaron just being out there impacts all four of those other guys in such a tremendous way, to where I can't help on DeMar because I got to worry about where De'Aaron is. Now that I know De'Aaron Fox is capable of shooting 36, 37% from 3-point range and even better on some nights, I got to keep an eye. I can't help. Sorry, man. I got to stick to De'Aaron because even if I stick to De'Aaron, he can still blow past me if he wants to. Yeah. So De'Aaron just being out there, there's going to be moments where De'Aaron absolutely takes over and everybody just gets out of his way. But on nights like last night where, okay, DeMar's cooking early on, I'll get my shots, I'll get my moments, but I don't have to be the give me the ball and get the hell out of the way, De'Aaron, that the Kings needed in the fourth quarter a couple of years ago and last season.
I'm sorry, I'm a little distracted here. I guess Shams just starts right away on ESPN.
Like, yeah, I saw that this morning too.
Shams, like, get to work, pal.
Yep, and this is what I told Chris Haynes. Shams was on Get Up this morning.
Shams is on SportsCenter right now.
That's what I'm saying. Think about what time that is. That, like, when you work at ESPN, you work there all damn day.
Yeah.
And that's what Shams is doing. So we've glowed about this offense here, Matt. What about on the defensive side of the ball? We talked about the way that the Kings shot the three-point shot. What we didn't talk about was the way that the Golden State Warriors shot the three-point shot. And when we got into the discussion about this game, you know, we stuck with the positive because there was a lot of positive takeaway, particularly the fact the Warriors hit 15 threes in the first half and the Kings still had the lead despite only hitting four. Now, if you're taking a different approach to that same number, Matt, the Kings hit the Warriors hit 15 threes in the first half. They wound up finishing, I think, with 28. That's kind of an extension of an issue that we saw last year. Big deal, little deal, or no deal, to steal a line from Mike and Tony.
Oh, it's a big deal. It's 100% a big deal. Now, I would first off like to preface by saying, hey, great game, Buddy Hield. Great game, Golden State Warriors. I'm glad you got that out of your system in the preseason when it doesn't matter. Shout out, you guys. Hopefully that doesn't carry into the regular season itself. Buddy looked fantastic last night, by the way. That being said, yes, it's a concern for the Kings because defensively, that was their primary issue last season. And Mike pointed it out. And I know I've said it on the show a million times, I feel like. If the Kings had a league average, we're talking middle of the pack, three-point defense last year, they would have been a top 10 defense. Like, that's how bad their three-point defense was. And the first glimpse we get, they get torched from the perimeter. Now, yes, everybody was getting theirs on the Warriors last night, and good for them. Like, everybody had the hot hand. It was one of those infectious nights where one guy makes it, everybody makes it. And we've seen the Kings have those nights before, too. But you can't just chalk it up to, oh, the Warriors were just hitting shots. No, you can't. And what I thought was interesting was one of the staples of the Kings training camp is defend physically without fouling. Well, the Kings did a good job not fouling last night. The Warriors only took, I think, 13 free throws. Kings had 17 team fouls. You absolutely live with that. But what Mike Brown said after the game was our perimeter defense was bad because they weren't feeling us, right? Everybody was coming into the game and hitting shots because they felt like they were getting as open of looks as they were getting in warmups or they were getting in training camp walkthroughs, right? The Kings' physicality is not just refusing to move if a guy drives into you. It's making a perimeter player feel you and not feel comfortable that they're going to have enough space to get a shot off the way that they want it. And the Kings didn't do a good enough job of that top to bottom, right? Throughout the entire game. So that's for sure a concern that I expect the Kings to work on and to look different. Mm-hmm. Even if the Kings foul three-point shooters two or three times on Friday in their rematch with Golden State, I'll honestly take that because now is the time to figure out how you can close out aggressively, the high-five closeouts that Mike Brown and Luke Louts talk so much about. Do that. You can foul a guy in the preseason and figure it out. I'd rather see that than the Ole defense that the Kings were playing on the perimeter.
So a couple of things there, right? Like, number one, I do agree with you. Like, that's something that you want to emphasize. You want to be better at defending the three. It took a situation where, like, securing the Bagley and the Matthews match with Chatty House, he said, I agree with you, Matt. Team hit 15 threes in the first half against the starters, talking about the Warriors, and they were still losing. You know what I mean? Like, with this team, the way they're constructed this year, is going to be somebody could have a record number of threes, and it's not necessarily the end of the world. The other thing about that, too, is you take on a team like the Golden State Warriors where they're a little bit of an anomaly. They, in some ways, only shoot the three. At least that's what it looks like it's going to be this year. That's going to be their opportunity to score is shooting the three and really spreading the floor out. And I think they were talking about Looney was talking about he was, you know, been working on his three. So it was almost the perfect storm. A Kings team that isn't where they're going to be, hopefully, defending the threes, going up against a team that almost exclusively just shoots threes and are good at getting those open looks and understand how to get those open looks. And they knocked them down. So D'Lo was asking me earlier in the day about, you know, how I felt about it. And I said, I'm gonna give it some time before, you know, I'm concerned about it or, you know, I look at it as the same problem as last year because I want to see them against a couple of different types of teams and see how their three-point defense is at that point.
Well, being concerned and panicking are two very different things. True. And I don't think there's any reason to panic for the Sacramento Kings at any point. Look, this what's the cliche? Rome wasn't built in a day, right? Like, we expected this team with this offensively gifted roster to look good offensively and still struggle defensively. Hey, guess what we got the first game? That's what we got. So sometimes the cover of the book kind of makes sense. But I hear what you're saying totally, KC. I will say this, though. For the Kings, I'm not concerned about what type of team or what any other team is doing. Mm-hmm. What I'm concerned about from the Sacramento Kings standpoint is, you know, this is a weakness. You've told us, you're emphasizing fixing it and correcting it in training camp. And the first glimpse we got against another team, regardless of if that team takes 100 threes a game or takes no threes, the first glimpse we got was against what you say you want to do. Mm-hmm. So that was my takeaway from that. The Kings, if they take on teams, and the Warriors are not going to be the only team that likes to get up a lot of threes. If the Kings take on those teams, they can't just tip their cap unless these guys are making ridiculous fadeaway contested jumpers and everything's just going in. And it's a lot easier to tip your cap when they make a tough shot than when they make a bunch of open shots.
Right.
So the Kings, they're going to play the Warriors four times this year. They're going to play teams that like to put up the three a lot. The Kings can't just go, well, that's their offense. Oh, well, that's how we can't deal with it. And I know you're not saying that, Casey. I want the Kings to approach every game the same way of, it doesn't matter who we're playing and how they want to play. This is what we need to correct. This is what's important for us to fix. And we're going to address that in this game. That's what I wanted to see last night. And that's what I'm looking for on Friday.
Yeah. So what do you think tomorrow looks like? Like, Kenny and I were trying to speculate on this a little bit about, you know, this preseason and the way that it's kind of laid out as they play every other game from now until Tuesday. And I think Mike addressed this today. Some members of the Chatty House kind of hip this too, that maybe we'll see the starters get a little bit more of a run tomorrow night in San Francisco. And then do you think it escalates closer to maybe a close to full rotation, full game load on Sunday at the Golden One Center Sunday afternoon against Portland, and then maybe it ramps down for that last one before they start preparing for Minnesota a week from Thursday?
I think that makes a ton of sense. And that's, I think, how I would build it if I were Mike or in charge of things. You remember last year, guys, the Kings and Warriors met for essentially their dress rehearsal games where they played like it was a normal game, and the Warriors beat the Kings. I think Steph Curry hit a buzzer beater or something like that. I
was traumatized by that.
Yeah. Apologies for bringing that up. But there's typically one preseason game where it's like, okay, this is the best that you have. But it's same way, like, I know the training camp or the preseason in the NFL changed, but week three in the NFL preseason was always like a real game, essentially. Yeah. And then week four was nothing.
Right.
So I kind of expect that to be Sunday in Sacramento. I expect to be the Kings' best shot. And that game is very interesting to me because I want to see for a full 48 minutes what the bench rotation looks like. Because I'm operating under the belief, guys, and I don't know about you, like I'm operating under the belief, and this is not through anything I've been told, this is pure speculation on my part, I'm operating under the belief that the Kings are going into the 24th against Minnesota and Kevin Huerter and Trey Lyles will not be ready to go. I hope to be pleasantly surprised. I think Jordan McLaughlin will be there. Jordan McLaughlin was working and warming up with the team last night on the floor. Did not play, obviously. He's expected to be reevaluated any day now. So hopefully he'll be ready to go and come back, and that'll certainly help with the guard rotation.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm expecting Huerter and Lyles not to be there, and then hoping I'm wrong, especially in the case of Kevin Huerter. So if that's the case, like Isaac Jones, he played well last night. Jalen McDaniels had some good defensive moments, was not good offensively, just like last season. So I'm a little concerned about what the rotation looks like for Sacramento on opening night against a really deep and talented Minnesota Timberwolves team. But to go back and answer your question, D'Lo, yeah, I'm expecting exactly what you laid out, that the Kings will have three-ish quarters of how they normally would play in Golden State, will go full out for Portland, and then the last game, which I think is the Clippers in the Intuit Dome, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's the Clippers.
Clippers Intuit Dome. And then I'm missing one, but they finished with the Jazz or something.
They have two more after that. Yeah, I would expect those two to be maybe one of the fourth one of those two.
One is the Clippers one, actually. I think about it.
I don't think there is a. Where's the Clippers game?
Did I imagine I don't
think there is a Clippers game? You guys are just out here making stuff up.
They got
Utah on Tuesday, and I think that's it, isn't it?
Clippers on Thursday.
Oh no, there is a game Thursday. Yeah, there it is.
I'm about to say there's only four games.
So maybe the Trailblazers one won't be the full dress rehearsal, and maybe the Utah one will be. One of those two games, the Portland game or the Utah game, will be like that full on, and then everything else will be kind of chill.
That game's in Utah. They don't deserve.
Fair. I think it should be the Portland game. I agree with you. I think it should be the Portland game. And then the Clippers game, they'll rest everybody.
Well, I think they'll play. I think Mike is going to play him, but that I don't think they'll play more. I think it'll look like last night. Look, that's what I think will happen. It'll be a bit just a little first half run, maybe one little stretch for Malik, maybe two. Mm. And then that'll be it. And of course, then they'll be a week away from the Minnesota Timberwolves opening up at the Golden One Center.
Yeah, Drew Down is right in the comments. Don't disrespect my people of Utah.
Big hockey fan Matt George now that you know they got a team out there now.
Big hockey fan.
ABC10 flying Matt George out to cover Utah hockey.
Can't wait.
Don't they have a team name yet? I don't think they have a team name. Season started.
Oh, if they had any balls, they'd call it the Utah hockey team.
That's what they should keep it.
The Utah Hockey Club.
The Utah Bibles.
Well, I don't know if you want to do that. You mentioned the
Utah Elders. That would be so good. Anyway, sorry.
Isaac Jones, Mason Jones. And then there's Colby Jones out there. I think some people were feeling pretty good about the way Isaac Jones played. Do you think he might have a spot on the final roster?
The best part about being a two-way guy from the team perspective is that you can have him play and suit up for pretty much half the season before you have to worry about conveying him. And when you're kind of beat up early on, now's the time to do it. So I wouldn't be surprised if he gets some minutes in the first week of the season or so if the Kings are as banged up as I expect them to be. Once Trey Lyles and Kevin Huerter come back, I don't expect him to get in too much. So, but I liked what he did. I thought he had some good moments, had a couple of blocks. He did airball a corner three and went 0-2 mm-hmm. for three, which wasn't great. But I'm not going to judge him based off those two shots when he did a lot more right than he did wrong. If we're going down through the three Joneses too, Mason Jones just decided to use all his fouls, and I appreciate him for that. 4 fouls in 7 minutes, my guy. But he had a couple threes, so good for him. And then
you don't want him to go to waste.
And then Colby Jones, I feel bad. Colby Jones does not look good.
No.
And this has been a really disappointing summer for Colby because I thought he looked good last summer. And then this summer he had an opportunity as a quote unquote veteran of summer league. And he didn't play well at all. And he's getting run in these games and he doesn't look like an NBA player. He's putting up good numbers in the G League, which is the signs of an NBA player. But there's something about this jump to the NBA that is just holding him back a little bit. So yeah. Colby out of the Joneses, Colby's at the bottom.
And what's happening too with Colby is people are starting to pass him up on the depth chart. I mean, Devin Carter's here now. I think Boogie Ellis is eyeing his spot, you know, wherever that spot is in the Kings, you know, pantheon of the roster. I feel Boogie Ellis might be passing him up. So, you know, not only is he not playing well, but they're bringing in guys that can kind of take his spot and take his standing.
I'm glad you brought up Boogie Ellis too. I like Boogie. I like Boogie a lot. There's such a log jam at his position. I don't think he has any shot to really get any kind of consistent playing time, but I love the way he plays. He's a microwave scorer off the bench. Doug Christie loves him. Like Doug Christie's a big fan of Boogie Ellis and Boogie is really determined to work hard to prove that he can play on the defensive end of the floor. But Boogie's a bucket and he comes in and he likes to score the basketball and he's fun to watch.
I look at him real quick. I look at him as a guy that is a long-term guy, part of your program. I like what I see from him. You may look at him like, I don't know the rules of the contract and stuff like that, but you know, he's not going to be with the Kings this year, but we'll have him in Stockton all year. We'll, you know, work on his game, work on some of the stuff that he needs to get ready for. And then maybe next year when we're going into the season, he's looking like a guy that may be able to be on the big club every now and then. Almost the same path as Keon Ellis. Isn't that how Keon was? Keon, the first year, he wasn't really up here much at all. He was in Stockton a lot, right? His rookie year.
Yeah, he bounced in between, but he definitely, he never got any run with Stockton last year. Right, so all of his Stockton time was his rookie year, yeah.
Right. So maybe that's how Boogie Ellis, you know, it plays out for him.
That's a good segue, Casey, because Matt, what I was going to ask you about was Keon Ellis and his play last night.
Yeah, I thought Keon did his job, right? He started the game and he was guarding Steph Curry and he made Steph Curry's life as difficult as possible. He had a steal or a couple, one steal, I think. He had a steal. Yeah. He went 1 for 2. Like that, Keon's shooting and scoring with the starting five is going to be spot scoring. And there are going to be games where, like we saw in the playoffs against the Golden State Warriors or the play-in against the Golden State Warriors, where he gets a lot of looks because the defense is daring him to beat them. He's going to get that. Last night, he didn't get that. He didn't get those opportunities very much. That didn't mean that he was uninvolved. Didn't he have like 4 assists or something like that too, D'Lo? I don't know if you have the box score in front of you. I don't
know. Yeah, Keon had 4 assists.
So, yeah. I mean, he did his job, and that's what he's supposed to do with those starters. He's supposed to space the floor, score when he gets the opportunity, take the right shot when the ball comes to him in rhythm, move the basketball, play solid defense. That's his job, and he did it. There's nothing about what Keon Ellis did last night that I think was bad. I mean, the perimeter defense as a team could have been better, so you lump him into that. But if Keon goes through games and is relatively unnoticeable, except for when he takes shots and hopefully makes shots, and when he's defending the top guard on the other team from time to time. But he goes through, and then you look at a stat line and you see those numbers and you see a steal and you see assists. It's like, then Keon Ellis is doing his job. He's a good player. And I don't know how he loses that spot.
I agree. We talked about it at length. And then you combine that if he starts and they're playing well, like,
yeah, you're not moving them.
Going to take them out, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I just wonder what it looks like if Kevin Huerter is doing his job and Keon Ellis is doing his job, whose job winds up being more important. Now, I think that one thing that will be of note is, Matt, kind of what you started this whole conversation with is DeMar got looks, Keegan got looks, Domas got looks, De'Aaron got looks. It helps that Keon doesn't really need looks.
Correct.
Kevin Huerter becomes completely ineffective if he doesn't have looks.
Correct.
Because he's not the defender that Keon is. Yes. So probably another point for Keon in the who starts at two conversation that does not include Malik Monk. Ever.
And once again, yes. Malik still got his 7 shots off the bench, and he had new money, but he looked like the exact same Malik.
Yeah.
Like, once again, Mike Brown's rotations are De'Aaron Fox was going to be the first guy subbed out of the game. And then Malik Monk was at the table, I think, a little bit longer than expected. So then Mike ended up subbing 3 guys in and had DeRozan, Fox, and Keon, I think, all subbed out of the game at the same time. But still, Mike's rotation is going to be to get Monk into the game first and have Fox taken out first to stagger that rotation. One of Fox, DeRozan, or Sabonis was on the floor at all times. And I thought it was interesting that the majority of the time DeRozan was on the floor, Fox was out there with him. I thought that Fox played like a minute and a half or 2 minutes where DeRozan was not out there. That was it. The rest of the time, DeRozan was out there with him. And then Domas played the first 10 minutes of the game. So if with Keon, with that starting unit, assuming that's what carries over when Kevin Huerter comes back, hey, here come 2 guys off the bench in Malik and Kevin that are just flamethrower scorers. And maybe it could work. We haven't seen it, and I'm looking forward to seeing it when Kevin's healthy. Maybe it could work. But I think we know that Keon with this starting lineup works, and the Kings might just go with what they know.
Great stuff from Matt George. As always, we got Yankees and Royals coming up next here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
Vamos, Yankees.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit MindfulTherapyGroup.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.